York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 143 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we are back for another episode, and this is the first episode of the season in which the New York Rangers are officially on their way to the NHL playoffs. The Rangers clinched that spot with a win over the Philadelphia Flyers on Tuesday night. They actually technically clinched it right before that win was in the books because the Washington Capitals beat the Detroit Red Wings, so that locked them into place. But of course, for their perspective, from their point of view, what was most meaningful, I think, was to finish it off with a win and punch their ticket. And now what we've known for really months is official, and that is that the Rangers will be our participant in the upcoming NHL playoffs, which are set to begin on April 22nd. This will be the third year in a row that the Rangers are going to the big dance. So we're going to break all that down. We got a lot of stuff to talk about on this week's show. And because I forgot to tease our guest last week, I want to make sure that I remember at the top right now. And it will be Dan Rosen, our buddy from NHL.com, NHL Network, all the various NHL platforms, who joins us to talk about where the Rangers sit league-wide going into the playoffs now that they've clinched. Give us some perspective on them, because Dan, I can tell you, I'm with him in the press box all the time. He watches a lot of Rangers. He's there for the vast majority of their home games, but he also covers the entire league. So I want to get some perspective from him on the President's Trophy race, on the rest of the Eastern Conference, on the Metro Division specifically. We're going to get into all that with Dan on this week's show. He, in my opinion, has his finger on the pulse of the league just about as well as anybody. So we'll chat with Dan in just a little bit. But first, let's start with some Rangers. And I mentioned they are the first team in the league this year to clinch a playoff spot. And I mean, that win on Tuesday night was just, I wrote that my head was spinning, and I felt like my head was spinning, because the way that that game went, really quiet in the first period, neither team scores. Even the second period, I mean, it felt like the Rangers were getting outplayed by a pretty significant margin for most of that game, especially, I thought, in that second period. Flyers take a 2-0 lead. It felt like, well, you know, the Rangers have won a lot of games recently, can't win them all kind of a thing. They didn't have their A game that night. But then what seemed like a fairly harmless power play goal for Mika Zibanejad at the end of that second period turned into, I would probably have to say, one of the craziest third periods I've ever covered. There were a total of 7 goals scored in that third period. The score was tied on 4 separate occasions in that period alone. The Rangers took the lead on 3 separate occasions in that third period. They entered the period down 2-1. Next thing you know, they were up 3-2. Then it was 3-3, 4-4, 5-5. I mean, it was just like every time I started writing what we would call in the business a running story, and a lot of us were talking after the game, this is probably the hardest running story I think that a lot of us have ever had to write. When I'm trying to update that, I'm trying to have all different scenarios ready. I'm trying to have something ready to go up on all of our websites pretty much as soon as the game is over. Sometimes it's pretty manageable. Other times it can be more challenging. I mean, this was a game where it's like, oh, well, it looks like the Rangers are going to lose. They don't have it tonight. Oh, wait, maybe there's signs of life here. Maybe they're going to make this happen. Oh, now they lost the lead again. Okay, wait, now they're back on top. It was just like one thing after another. And again, not the prettiest game that they've played all season. I mean, far from it, to be quite honest with you guys. For the first almost 2 full periods, it felt like they couldn't generate much of anything offensively. There was a point in that game where the Flyers were out shooting them. I think it was like 23-11. And then all of a sudden they bust out and they're scoring at will in the third period. But the defense, obviously, for the Rangers and the Flyers at that point was very, very shaky. So just talking to some of the players afterwards, talking to Peter Laviolette after the game, they very much understood that this was not a very well-played game on their part. And they were especially, I think, disappointed with how loose they were defensively. And they're dealing with a lot of injuries on the blue line right now, which we're going to get to over the course of this episode. But what was a redeeming characteristic for the Rangers in that game is what we've seen a lot of all season long. This team is resilient. They fight until the very end. They have 23 comeback wins now this season, which is tied for second in the NHL. And that is a trait that has served them well really for a few years now. It seems like they've had that knack for, you can just never count them out of a game, even if it looks like they're off. They find ways to rally. They find ways to dig deep, especially in some of these third periods. And that's something that you hope and you think could potentially serve them well in the playoffs, where maybe if things aren't going well for them for a period or two, they can always find a way to get themselves back in a game. And they certainly have a knack for doing that. That win over the Flyers, which ultimately ends in overtime, Adam Fox just 30 seconds into overtime, or 36 seconds, I should say, into overtime, ends it. Just another bonkers game. And a lot of the Rangers' top guys, whether it's Fox, Panarin, Zibanejad, Trocheck, Lafreniere scores a couple goals in that third period. He's been, I think I've mentioned this a few times recently, but really good overall season for him, but especially good, I think, recently. Their big guns were the guys that stepped up to help them pull that one out. But the couple games before that were much more convincing wins, in my opinion. They took care of business against two of the top teams in the Eastern Conference with that shootout win over the Florida Panthers on Saturday, which was preceded by that 5-2, I believe it was, a pretty significant win in Boston on Thursday. So the Rangers are rolling in a lot of ways right now. Again, Philly game wasn't their best. They still find a way to win. But as far as the record, the wins and losses go, for an extended stretch now, the Rangers are just having a ton of success. 8-2 since the trade deadline, 18-4-1 since the All-Star break. That is an impressive record. Remember where they were going into that All-Star break. They had had that stretch of almost 2 months where it felt like they were slipping and there were a lot of doubts starting to creep in and you were wondering if they were really as good as they looked to be in those first couple months of the season. All these cracks in the armor, whether it was goaltending, whether it was defending against the rush, whether it was 5-on-5 offense, there were legitimate questions swirling around the Rangers that made you start to doubt a little bit just how good they were. Because for the first couple months of the season, they looked like arguably the best team in hockey. And then they went through a very mediocre stretch for the next couple months. But now what we've seen for these basically almost 2 months since we've come out of the All-Star break is that you could once again argue that the Rangers have been the best team in hockey. Again, it's not always perfect. There are certain games where you can pinpoint some very real flaws, but they've had a lot of really convincing wins in this stretch. And when you look at that wins-loss record, which is ultimately how these teams are going to be judged, the Rangers have been doing that at a better clip than anyone in the league. In fact, they sit at the top of the league right now. They're the only team with 100 points overall, first overall in the league, the leader of the pack for the President's Trophy race. We're going to talk about a little bit of that stuff more as the show goes on, but look at their position in the standings right now, and they've earned it by playing, in large part, some really good hockey, and most notably, constantly just winning games, whether they're at their very best or whether they have to grind it out a little bit more. This team just keeps winning games, and that especially has been the theme since that All-Star break. I will say that I thought it was pretty telling walking into the locker room after that win over the Flyers on Tuesday, and obviously, there's no champagne. I was actually with Michelle Margot from SNY, who, when I do the TV hits, I've done a lot of them with her over the years. And she covers a lot of baseball. And she was looking at me and she's like, where's the champagne? Because, you know, baseball teams, anybody who follows MLB knows, when they clinch a playoff berth in the regular season, I mean, they celebrate like they won the World Series. There's champagne being sprayed everywhere, beer everywhere. The whole clubhouse is like a big party. So she thought she was going to be walking into something similar with the Rangers when they clinched their playoff spot on Tuesday, but it was like any other post-game setting. A handful of guys hanging around their lockers, no music blaring, nothing too crazy. You wouldn't be able to tell if you walked into that locker room if that was the win that got them into the playoffs or if that was some ho-hum game in the middle of the season. It felt very, very normal, And I think part of that is just hockey culture. I don't think you see a lot of teams throwing huge celebrations just for getting into the playoffs. But I also absolutely believe that there is a level of expectation in that locker room right now to where, to a man, and a lot of them spoke about this after the game, this is not anywhere near the top of their list of priorities. Obviously, they'll all tell you, you need to get in the playoffs to have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. So this is step number one. A lot of guys use that phrase. This is step number one. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what Peter Laviolette said to the group after the game. But Laviolette even admitted it's really been pretty obvious for a while that they were getting in. So it wasn't like there was this drama at the end and they were scratching and clawing and needed to get all these points and needed to rally their way into the playoffs. There's still 10 games remaining in the season. They're the first team to punch their ticket in. So I think, especially given what they've been through the last few years, and a lot of these core pieces have been here for a handful of years now and have experienced the highs of that 2022 run to the Eastern Conference Final, and especially the lows of last year's first round exit at the hands of the New Jersey Devils. And that, I think, absolutely has been the driving force for this team all season. That bitter taste that they have in their mouths from the way that the playoffs ended for them last season and that early exit, that has stuck with a lot of these guys. And they know, as well as anyone, probably better than anyone, that they're not going to be judged by whether they win the President's Trophy or how many wins they get in the regular season or what their seed ends up being. They know that they're ultimately going to be judged by whether or not they at least go on a good run in these playoffs. And obviously, you know, the goal is to win the cup. It's been 30 years for this franchise. They are clearly one of the top contenders in the NHL right now. And for them, that's what it's about. So I think there's a heightened level of focus. A lot of the players after the game were saying, this is not a time to start counting our blessings or talking about what we've accomplished. We need to stay focused on the task at hand. And the task at hand is to make sure that they are in the best position possible to go on a playoff run. So that is, I think, the prevailing message that was coming out of that locker room. And that's why you really didn't see any kind of a celebration at all. There's an appreciation for what they've done, but they know that their legacy will be cemented in the next handful of weeks. They hope several, many weeks coming up if they're really going to go on the run that they envision. And that is really what is going to matter. Again, that is ultimately how they will be judged. Now, as I mentioned, they still do have 10 regular season games left to play. So that's a lot of hockey left. It's almost a month still to go until we get to the actual playoff games. And meanwhile, the race for the President's Trophy and the division are tight. So you do wonder, and I've talked to a handful of guys about this in the last few days, about how much is that on their mind? How much does that really mean to them? If you look at the standings entering play on Wednesday, which is when we're recording, the Rangers have a one-point lead over the Boston Bruins as far as the conference goes, and you can also lump the Dallas Stars in there if you're talking about the President's Trophy. They have a one-point lead for the best record in the league, as well as the number one overall seed in the conference. And they have a three-point lead over the Carolina Hurricanes for that Metro Division title. So would they like to accomplish both of those things? I think the answer is yes, but is it of the utmost importance? I think the answer is very clearly no. I actually sat with Mika Zibanejad at his locker following Monday's practice and just sort of threw some of these questions at him. I wanted to get a feel for, you know, one of the clear team leaders like that, a guy who's the second longest tenured player on the team. Do any of those milestones, would any of those accomplishments as far as the regular season is concerned, have more meaning than the others? And he told me that for him, having lost some key games over the years to the Carolina Hurricanes, having watched them win the division a handful of times, I think this would be the third year in a row. Now, remember that COVID shortened season, they were in separate divisions, but I think Carolina also won their division that season. So Carolina's won three division titles in a row, the last two of them in the Metro. And Mika said to me, if there's anything that I look at that would be satisfying, that I think as a group we would really appreciate, it would be taking the division title away from the Hurricanes. And he referenced that again to the group after the game on Tuesday night, told them, hey, you know, Carolina lost to Pittsburgh, so you got a 3-point lead now, and his eyebrows went up a little bit. So I do think that the division title is something that they would like to have. And I wrote this the other day. I think if you're talking about playoff matchups, which I know a lot of fans are analyzing right now, and we're probably going to spend some time talking about in the coming weeks, I also think that getting that number one overall seed in the Eastern Conference would be a pretty advantageous spot for the Rangers, because we've talked about wanting to avoid, if you can, the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round. Tampa Bay looks like it's almost surely going to be the top wild card spot, which means if you have the second best record in the East, or you're the other division winner. So let's say that Boston, for example, if they had the best record in the East and the Rangers won the Metro, the Rangers would be lined up to play Tampa Bay. So if you can make sure that you finish ahead of Boston and Florida and Carolina, which are the main teams at the top of the standings in the Eastern Conference right now, and you get that number one overall seed, well, then you are ensuring that you will play the second wild card team. Right now, that would be the Washington Capitals, but the Detroit Red Wings are also in the mix. The Islanders are in the mix. There's a few teams that are still hanging around there, but all of those teams I think you would much rather see than the Lightning. So I think from that perspective, the best case scenario for the Rangers would be to win the conference, meaning take the number one overall seed in the conference, ensure that you're going to play that second wild card team, ensure that you're going to get home ice advantage throughout the playoffs, and then go about your business from there. But if they slipped out of that spot, or if they even slipped into second place in the division, which at this point would line them up to play the Flyers, which is another team I think I would rather see than the Lightning, well, that isn't a big deal, I don't think, or a worst case scenario for them either. When Peter Laviolette spoke after the game, and a few players noted this as well, they talked more about the process of wanting to feel like they're continuing to grow as a group, like they're continuing to integrate the new players that they got at the trade deadline into the lineup, like they are staying as sharp as possible going into the playoffs. That seems to be their primary focus more than the seeds or the division or anything that has to do with the standings. For them, I think it's just about feeling like they are playoff ready, like their game is on point and they're ready to roll in there feeling like they have their A game. And so that seems to be the message coming from Peter Laviolette. And I do think that that is a good mindset to have. But I also think, and I've mentioned this a few times, that it is important to make sure that they're not limping into the playoffs. And to me, if I'm giving you my opinion and my priority, that would probably be number one. You look at the state of their decor right now, and I mentioned this at the top, three of their regular six defensemen are out right now. You've got Erik Gustafsson, who took an elbow to the head from Sam Reinhart during overtime of that win against the Panthers on Saturday. It's certainly, you have to at least be concerned that there's a head injury, a concussion, something of that nature there. And so we don't know how much time he's going to miss. He didn't play Tuesday for the first time. We know that the Rangers have been missing Ryan Lindgren and Jacob Trouba with lower body injuries. Now, the good news on those guys is that Lindgren returned to practice on Monday. I mean, just how can you even make this stuff up with this guy anymore? He's just over a week from having that injury where he couldn't even put any weight on his left leg when he had to be helped off of the ice. It looked like it was a potentially season-ending injury. You're worried about ACL or the knee. You know, I have heard whispers that it could be an ankle thing going on with him as opposed to the knee, which I think is probably a more preferable scenario for the Rangers. But even then, the timetable that Peter Laviolette gave us when Lindgren first got hurt was 2 to 3 weeks. And then we see him back on the ice practicing with the team a week later. Now, I don't think he's on the verge of getting into a game. Peter Laviolette has been very clear with both Lindgren and Trouba that they are not going to rush them. And I think that is very wise from an approach standpoint. So I think probably going to be a little time before we see either one of those guys in the game. But then Trouba comes back. He participated in the optional morning skate on Tuesday. So Lindgren and Trouba are back on the ice. I think you're going to see them, even though the team is kind of rarely practicing these days because of how many games they have, I think you're going to see Lindgren and Trouba get a few practices with the team in these next handful of days and probably be options to come back into the lineup within another week or so. It looks like, at least based on what I'm seeing. So that's encouraging news, but you still know that you have a very banged up group right now, especially that D-Core. And for me, I just feel like you have to make sure that all of these guys are as well rested as possible while still making sure that you get them at least a few games to keep them sharp and make sure that they feel like their stamina is where it needs to be. They're in hockey shape. They're in playing shape. They're feeling like they are in their rhythm and in the flow of the game. Like, you have to balance those things for sure right now. And we've seen Laviolette do a little bit of cycling when it comes to his bottom six forwards, kind of bouncing Matt Rempe and Johnny Brodzinski in and out of the lineup. He had the one game where he scratched Will Cooley. But for me, I think it's much more important that you try to, at least in these last 10 games, at least pick one game each for, I would like to see Artemi Panarin get a day off. Now, he's on pace to play 82 games. I know for some players, that is an important milestone that they want to hit. And I think if these guys express to Laviolette that they want to do that, that he's not going to fight them on it. And I mean, Panarin has been an absolute madman recently, 34 points in his last 19 games. The guy is just absolutely on fire. But now that he's hit that 100 point marker for the first time in his career, which you know deep down is something that he wanted to do, maybe you could convince him at some point in these next few weeks just to take a breather. Because again, the Rangers are in this stretch of 20 games in 38 days to close out the season. And if all of your top players go through all those games, and I mean, a lot of these guys are playing heavy minutes. Look at the end of that game against the Flyers on Tuesday. Laviolette was leaning so heavily on his top six. You got Panarin and Trocheck and Zibanejad and Adam Fox, for that matter. All these guys are playing well over 20 minutes a night in a lot of these situations. And I just think that to risk having them go into the playoffs where their gas tank isn't as full as it can possibly be, I think that that is asking for trouble. And even though you'd like to get the President's Trophy, you'd like to get number one in the conference, you'd like to get the division title, I think it's not going to kill you to just strategically rotate and pick a game here or a game there for each of these guys. I'm not advocating for them to not play multiple games. I'm just saying give one game to Panarin, give one game to Trocheck, give one game to Zibanejad, give one game to Fox, guys like that who have carried such a heavy load for you this season. I asked Laviolette about this the other day. This is kind of the last piece I'll say on this. And he said, listen, guys want to play, but if it's a situation where somebody's questionable and would probably play if it was a playoff game, but I know that they're dealing with a little something, I'm probably going to take the cautious approach and going to ask them to take a night off. Now, I think it's an individual basis. I think he's probably taking the temperature of each one of these guys and how they feel about this, but he did sound open to that possibility. And again, with the way that this schedule, it just doesn't make any sense to me the way the NHL scheduled the end of this season, the way that they have all of these games crammed into such a short period of time, I just think that if you can find a spot to give a guy a breather, that is probably going to do more good than it's going to do any harm. So that would make a lot of sense to me, and I'm very curious to see if the Rangers do that. But hockey is such a tough guy sport. I have such tremendous respect for the way that these guys want to grind their way through every single game. It's like a badge of honor for them if they can play all 82 games. But you also, I think, if you look around at other sports, they do this a lot, this load management stuff. And it's for very, I think, smart, strategic reasons. And that's because you want these guys feeling like they have fresh legs at least as much as possible and feeling as healthy as possible when the real games, the playoffs, begin. So we'll be keeping an eye on that in these next two games as the Rangers play out the stretch, along with keeping an eye on the standings. So with all of that being said, let's talk about the standings and let's talk about the league and a bunch of different topics. I'm not even sure where this is going to go yet. We'll have to wait and see. But let's have our chat now with Dan Rosen of NHL.com. And once we're through with that, I'll be back to answer this week's set of Twitter questions. Now let's welcome back into the show. I forget if this is second or third time we're having him on, but I know this is one of our go-to guys when we want to talk about not just the Rangers, but the entire league. And that would be Dan Rosen from NHL.com, NHL Network. I forget if there's other places I'm missing there, Dan. But anyway,
Nice to see you again. I just saw you like a few hours ago last night, but thank you for coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think it's the third time. I'm gonna go with third.
I think we try to do at least once a season. This is the fourth season of the podcast, so maybe three or four, something
maybe
like that.
It's four.
It could be. How was that? How was that story last night? How did you piece it together after that third period?
That was something else. I've done a lot of running stories in my day, and some at huge games I could think of. I wrote the running for the 2010 gold medal game, U.S. Canada in Vancouver. Overtime, Sidney Crosby. I did the running story. Running mean you're writing as the game going on. You file at the buzzer, and you basically have like a minute after the game to get it done, so you can get down into the locker room and do your job there too. I did it in the 2013 Stanley Cup final. I think it was Game 6 when the Blackhawks scored 2 goals in 17 seconds to come back and win the Stanley Cup in the third period, late in the third period, obviously. And so I've done a lot, but that one was a wild one, and you catch yourself, right? Like, you're like, I missed that goal. I missed that goal. Like, when you're writing, it's like you're sometimes not even watching the game, even though you really are watching the game. But it was wild. It was fun. It was a very interesting night at Madison Square Garden. Like, tale of two halves, right? I mean, the first 40 minutes was slow, not much there, and then it got really, really wild.
Yeah, it was, and also if you're scoreboard watching, like going into the third period, the Red Wings had a lead on the Capitals. Yep. So if the Red Wings won and the Rangers lost, the Rangers wouldn't clinch. So I found myself writing a story at intermission like, oh, well, the Rangers are going to have to wait a few more days to clinch. And then all of a sudden, the Capitals come back. The Rangers have this crazy third period, 7 goals in the third period, 4 ties, I think it was, in the third period. Just nuts. But yeah. Anyway, I'm sure the fans don't care too much about our problems. But from our side of things, it was kind of annoying. It was exciting, but it was a little crazy.
Exciting? It was a little much.
Yeah, it was a little crazy there. But anyway, I want to talk some Rangers stuff with you for sure. But I also want to just, for you, who I know watches everything, covers the whole league, you got your power rankings and all those different things that you do. I want to talk a little bit about where maybe you see them ranking among the contenders. We know they're the first team to clinch. We know, at least as it sits on Wednesday afternoon, that they are the front runner for the President's Trophy, but that race is extremely tight. You've got so many teams bunched at the top of the NHL standings right now. So when you look around the league, when you assess the Rangers, when you assess the other top contenders, like, how do you kind of have that pecking order in your mind right now?
Well, I can tell you our Super 16 power rankings, which I put together, comes out Thursday, and the Rangers will be number one in the Super 16. Now, there's 12 of us this week that contribute to it, and there's a math, the equations, and all that. So we each do our own. And for my personal power rankings, I have them at number two. I have the Colorado Avalanche number one. The Avalanche just won 9 games in a row. They lost to Montreal 2-1 Tuesday night. But, I mean, they had a 9-game winning streak. They've been clicking on all cylinders. They've got arguably the best player in the game right now, or at least definitely one of them. So do the Rangers, but in Nathan MacKinnon. So I just have the Avalanche a tick better than them. But to be honest with you, if you were to tell me right now that the Rangers and Avalanche would play in a 7-game series, and I know all of your listeners would take that in a second because it would be a Stanley Cup final,
mm-hmm.
I probably would pick the Rangers because of the goaltending. And Vince, you know me, how like I am not – you know how I feel about Alexander Georgiev. I've been critical of him. When he was a Ranger, I was, and – I think sometimes the Avalanche win in spite of him this season. I think he's been good, but I think sometimes they win in spite of him. And the difference is I think the Rangers, a lot of times these days, maybe not, against the Flyers Tuesday night, notwithstanding, win because of Igor Shesterkin. So there's a difference there. But right now I would have the Avalanche. Right now I have the Avalanche 1 and the Rangers 2. But in our overall NHL.com power rankings, it's actually flipped. The Rangers will be 1 and the Avalanche 2.
Interesting. I completely agree with you from the goaltending perspective that the Rangers would have a clear advantage there. But I do feel like the Avalanche and the way that they play and the overall skill and team speed that they have, that the Rangers might have a tough time keeping up with them in that kind of 7-game series. And the fun part about this conversation is we'll see a preview of it on Thursday in Colorado. And obviously both teams have a long way to go to get there. But I do feel like the matchup there would be difficult for the Rangers, because I do think that those high-flying, really fast, skilled kind of teams like that that can open things up and attack in transition, especially with some of the issues the Rangers have had defending odd man rushes and things of that nature, that could be a team that I feel like would be pretty difficult for them.
Well, and I think it'll be very difficult for the Rangers Thursday night. There's no question about it, because without Trouba, without Lindgren, without Gustafsson, you know, and maybe, I don't know, without Alexander Wenberg too. We don't know if he's going to be able to make the trip, you know, if his wife gave birth, or, you know, all of the along those lines, then it's going to be a challenge for them, without question. Plus, they're coming off of a high of winning a big game, clinching the playoffs, getting 100 points, going on a long road trip now. Distance-wise, I mean, it's only a two-game trip, but distance-wise. So I think it'll be a hard game for the Rangers Thursday night. But I do think, though, that since they made the additions that they made, Wenberg and filling the holes that they filled, Wenberg, Roslovic, the Rangers, to me, just look like a deeper team. They play like a deeper team. And they are a team that I think that at times can they can control games, even against teams that can high fly it like the Avalanche do. It's almost impossible to stop Nathan MacKinnon, but if you can at least limit what he does, I think you can beat the Avalanche, because so much of what goes on with the Avalanche is based off of what MacKinnon does. He's the way he skates, the way he moves. It's like he makes, you know, he's just so violently good, you know? And if you can at least limit him, have the puck, make him play in the, you know, at least the defensive end, you know, stop his rushes if you can, things along those lines. You're not going to be able to do it all the time. I think the Avalanche can be had. But again, he's also maybe the hardest player in the league to stop right now. McDavid being McDavid, Kucherov being Kucherov. But MacKinnon, man, I mean, the way he plays, it's all over the ice. And it's just, like I said, he's got violent speed.
It's interesting to see, or it will be interesting to see how the Rangers play that matchup game there. Now, they're on the road, so obviously the Avalanche will have the advantage as far as choosing the matchups. But I would imagine that they're going to want Mika Zibanejad out there against MacKinnon a lot. I don't know if they'd want the Panarin line having to defend them a whole lot. They usually like to try to find points of separation for the Panarin line so that they can attack, whereas Mika's line takes on some of the tougher defensive assignments. If you have Wenberg in the lineup, then you could maybe give Wenberg some of those shifts as well. But no matter who it is, that is not an easy task, slowing down MacKinnon. Now, the Avalanche out west, we love the way that they're playing. And the West has some other, you know, teams at the top that I think are pretty dangerous. But when you look at the Eastern Conference, because that's where the focus, I think, for the Rangers is right now, yeah. Obviously, they're in a tight race with Carolina for the first place in the Metro Division. You also look at Florida and Boston, who are right on their heels as far as that number one seed goes. And to me, I think the number one seed is kind of a big deal in the Eastern Conference, because if you get the number one seed, you're playing the second wild card versus the first wild card, which looks like it'll probably be Tampa. But when you look at the East, sounds like you would have the Rangers as your front runner. I mean, I like the Panthers a lot myself. How do you kind of size up, especially those top four teams in the East?
Yeah, I mean, I love the Panthers. I really have been impressed with the Rangers and the Hurricane. I mean, they're right there. If you had to ask me to choose right now, I like the way the Rangers have been able to handle the injuries that they have more than I like the way the Panthers have been able to handle the injuries that they have. What does that mean? I'm not so sure. What the Panthers have that I think will make it very challenging for every other team in the East is they've got that bite to their game, right? They got a little bit of a snarl to their game that works in the playoffs. They get under your skin. You want to play a 7-game series against them? They don't mind that, because they know by game 6, or again, certainly by game 7, they're going to have you so angry you're spinning like a top, right? I mean, that's the way Matthew Tkachuk is. If he's in the lineup, that's the way Ryan Lomberg is. Nick Cousins is that way. So I think they might have that. That's the advantage that they have. So that's why I would give them, you know, the edge at this point. every team is fully healthy. Like if the Panthers are fully healthy, I think they are just a touch above everybody else in the Eastern Conference. And I think the Rangers are a touch above Carolina, and they have been all season. And I don't think it's a fluke that they are. I think that they're deeper offensively, even with the additions of Jake Gensel and Evgeny Kuznetsov. Kuznetsov, I don't know necessarily that he fits the style of the Hurricanes. They are a speeded up north-south team. He is a slow it down east-west player. So does he fit? That's the big question that I think they're going to have to answer. Whereas we know the fits for the Rangers, and it's working, and fully healthy, they look like they have a filled out deep lineup, and they have better goaltending too than Carolina. So if you had to rank them, I'd probably go Florida 1, Rangers 2, Carolina 3, Boston 4, only because while we keep saying it, hey, I don't know how they're going to do it, they keep getting it done. They still, in a 7-game series, I don't think they have the center depth to be able to handle the other top teams in the Eastern Conference, even though they've been, you know, for the balance of the season, they've been very good. The interesting thing too, though, is if you finish, you want to finish first in the East with the most points, or you want to finish second in the Metro. You don't want to finish first in the Metropolitan Division and second most points, because that lines you up to play the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round.
Well, that leads me right into the next thing I want to ask you, because that's been a very hot topic with Rangers fans really for a couple weeks now, because we find ourselves looking ahead to those matchups, especially now that they've clinched. And the feeling among the fan base, I would say my personal feeling, and it sounds like you're kind of echoing those sentiments, that when you look at the potential first round opponents for the Rangers, the Tampa Bay Lightning are the one that scares you the most, with the championship pedigree, with the star level players that they have at multiple positions, you know, versus then you look at the other options that maybe could line up for the Rangers to play, whether it's the Capitals, the Red Wings, the Flyers. You know, there's a few teams like the Islanders that are still hanging around in that wild card race. I mean, for you, is it the Lightning are the absolute worst case scenario and there's a big drop off after that? Or how do you size what you might want out of a first round matchup if you were able to pick it?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously can't, but no, the Lightning are the worst matchup to get out of all those teams for what you said. I mean, the championship pedigree, the goaltender, they're thin. They're very thin, okay? You get past Kucherov, Point, Stamkos, Cirelli. You get past their top six. You get past Hedman, Chernak, they're thin. But the problem is you have to get past those guys, right? And that's the difference. Whereas Philadelphia doesn't have those guys. They don't have anywhere close to those guys. Washington, I mean, they have Ovechkin, and he's scoring goals. He's got 8 goals on his last 22 shots. So he's on a bit of a heater right now, all right? So they have him. But again, thin, you know, like, They've got some experience, but they've got young guys who are playing significant roles. Now, that might be good enough to get them in the playoffs, but to win around, I don't see it. Detroit has a lot of second and third liners, you know, and they're veteran guys, but you saw the goaltending has really dropped off for them. The defense has dropped off for them, and that's why they're not in position right now. So, and the Islanders, the Rangers have owned the Islanders, right? I mean, this season. So, it's Tampa. You don't want if you had to pick, you don't want to pick. You wouldn't pick them. And that's why I winning not just the division, but finishing with the most points in the conference is going to be key, because let's face it. I mean, the Rangers have 10 games left. Carolina's got 9. The Rangers have a 3-point lead. Carolina's got to make a big push here to overtake the Rangers. And the Rangers don't exactly have the hardest schedule remaining either. OK, I mean, Colorado, yes. But beyond that, it's, you know,
yeah,
if you could say it's easy, it's easy. It's not easy, but
certainly a lot easier than it's been, because right. they've been through a gauntlet recently.
Right, exactly. So it's going to take a lot for Carolina, but the Rangers now have to utilize that schedule and stay above the Panthers and the Bruins and finish first in the division, but finish first in the conference. That will be the key thing. Obviously, get some home ice advantage throughout the, you know, if they get the President's Trophy, the playoffs, if not, at least the Eastern Conference, but you avoid the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round.
Other thing I wanted to pick your brain about, because I think that there's probably some New York bias when you have this conversation around here. And I know that, you know, for you, you have to look at it objectively from a league-wide standpoint. I'm a voter, so obviously I'm going to try to look at it objectively from a league-wide standpoint as well. And when you talk about the race for the Hart Trophy, you've talked about MacKinnon a bit. obviously McDavid is to me still the best player in the world, although I guess McKinnon's given him a run for his money. Kucherov, the point total is significantly higher than Artemi Panarin. So most people look at those three guys as the front runners. Now, the argument for Panarin is that, you know, you look at the next highest point scorer on the Rangers, it's Vincent Trocheck, who's having a great all-star level season, but he's like at 70 or just over 70 points right now. And you look at the injuries the Rangers have dealt with. You look at Mika Zibanejad not scoring a ton at 5-on-5. You look at the slump that a guy like Igor went through in the middle of the season. I mean, Panarin has carried this team, especially from an offensive perspective. The Rangers at 5-on-5, especially before the trade deadline, were largely a one-line team when it came to generating offense. So there's an argument that if you pick it apart where you can say, you know what, Panarin belongs in that conversation. But I think in talking to people around the league, the feeling is that he's slightly behind those other guys. And, you know, maybe it's as simple as just looking at the point total. Maybe there's more to it. But how do you size up the race for the Hart Trophy and where you might be leaning at this point?
Yeah, I don't think he is top three in the race right now. And that's not a knock on Panarin. He's been outstanding this season. McKinnon is the number one guy for me right now, and I understand there's Mikko Rantanen and Cale Makar too, but McKinnon makes everything go in Colorado, and his point totals 123 points. I think at this point he's tied with Kucherov, and Kucherov's got a lot more points than anybody else on his team. But I do, if you do the math, I think if you take McKinnon off the Avalanche and you take Kucherov off the Lightning, they both don't make the playoffs. And you look at the difference between the teams, the Avalanche are way better, right? So that alone tells me he's most valuable to his team. Like, the Avalanche are, you take, they're a good team, but McKinnon is what makes them a good team. The Lightning are getting a great season from Kucherov, and they probably would be nowhere near the playoffs without him. But I do think that if you took McKinnon away from Colorado, that they wouldn't be in the playoffs either. As good as they've been this season, I think that's what it means to him. Now, McDavid has come up, has pushed up the scoring race, and obviously since Knobloch took over there, the Oilers have just been terrific. I mean, they have 40 wins since he took over that team. So he has to be in the running as well. I want to say, I mean, listen, David Pastrnak is not getting the puck anymore from David Krejci or Patrice Bergeron, and he's still scoring at an incredible rate, and he's a 100-point player. So he has to be in the conversation. Is he ahead or behind Panarin? I don't know at this point. I think we got to see how it finishes. But he's right there with Panarin. But I don't think he's there with McKinnon, Kucherov, and McDavid. And the other one that we have to talk about at this point, although I don't think he'll get the votes for it, is Roman Josi. I mean, the Nashville Predators are 16-0-2 in their last 18 games. And in that stretch, Josi has 24 points and a plus 22 rating. So plus minus is what it is, and I don't buy into it. I know you don't buy into it. But when you're at that level of plus minus, that says something about you must be doing something right. Mm-hmm. You know. And Roman Josi's been a terrific defenseman all season. It's just that his numbers have gone through the roof in the last quarter of the season.
You know, I find myself leaning, especially when it's close, towards centers, because I just feel like it's a more demanding position. You know, for me, if you're going to pick a player to build around, you're typically, I mean, obviously goalie, but you're typically going to look down the middle at the center position. And so that's why when people talk about the best players in the world, McDavid and McKinnon are always the first two for me to come to the tip of my tongue. And you look at the kind of seasons that they're having, the production that they're having, where their teams are, you know, especially you talk about McKinnon and the way Colorado's playing, and you're arguing that they might be the best team in the league right now. It's hard for me to argue against that. And, you know, when they've got 25 more points than Panarin, who, you know, legitimately, I believe, you know, you could make a case for him to be certainly in the top five, maybe even in the top three. But yeah, I mean, I always find myself leaning toward the centers.
I do too. It's a more demanding position. It's a harder position to play. You're controlling the game. The winger is more. Now, Panarin's a different type of winger because he can control the game.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And Kucherov is that way too. So when they, you know, they demand the puck on the wing as opposed to demanding the puck in the middle of the ice. Let me throw this one out to you too. I don't know if he's going to get there, but if Austin Matthews scores 70 goals, well, he's got to be right there. You know, like that thing, it's the hardest thing to do in the league is score goals. And he would have scored 70. Now he's got 59. So he's got to get a goal per game pace for the rest of the season to do it. But he's at a near goal per game pace already. I think he's on pace at this point for 67 or 68 or something like that. So he's going to need a couple of hat tricks probably in there to do it. But if he scores 70 goals, he might beat them all.
Yeah, that would be tough to ignore. The other thing I would just add quickly on centers is, you know, a lot of the wingers, like Panarin, is not the strongest defensive player. And I'm not saying all these centers that we're talking about are either, but we get caught up in looking at the point totals, looking at the offensive production. But a lot of the centers have more demands on them when it comes to defensive responsibility as well. And I try to factor that in a little bit as well. It's not just about how many points you score.
It's the Crosby-Ovechkin debate. Crosby's always been a better player than Alex Ovechkin because Crosby plays center and Ovechkin plays the wing. Mm-hmm. And Ovechkin is the best goal scorer maybe we've ever seen in the National Hockey League, certainly of this generation. Matthews is the best goal scorer in the league right now, but of this generation, Ovechkin's the best goal scorer. But in order to score goals, you have to have centers that set you up for them. Crosby has been the best player. I think Crosby is a top five player of all time. And I think a key thing is the position he plays. He's a center. He's in control, whereas Ovechkin is puck on a stick, off the stick. And he scores, and he does it better than anybody else, but it's still a center. And that's what makes Matthews, who is a center, and if he's to score 70 goals, then I'm looking at it like, ooh, okay, maybe he's the guy, you know?
Well, it's going to be interesting because, I mean, even what happens in the next few weeks could sway this race a little bit. And I know I'm going to really start trying to dig in and pay close attention and even dive into some of the numbers and the analytics and things like that before I have to make that decision. But it is not an easy decision this year for sure. All right, Dan, thank you so much. I really do appreciate the time. You guys can find him at NHL.com. Anything else I should mention in there as well, Dan?
Well, listen to this podcast, but listen to my podcast, the NHL At The Rink podcast. We actually recorded today. A lot on the Eastern Conference, a lot on a potential Rangers opponent, the Washington Capitals.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks again, Dan. I'll see you, I'm sure, sometime soon at the rink.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, Ben.
Welcome back, and thanks again to Dan for taking some time to chat with us this afternoon. And now, let's dive right into this week's set of Twitter questions, which will begin with one from Robert Jordan, who wrote, Zach Jones's recent play definitely has increased the possibility that Lindgren and or Gustafsson are not back next year. So when everyone is healthy, is Jones in for game one? Is it opponent dependent? In for game three when there is a healthy scratch because they dropped the first two? Or riding the press box? So, Robert, a few things to address there. And I saw a few people asked about Zach Jones because I agree with you. He's been playing really well since he had a slot into the lineup for Trouba's injury. And it was especially interesting on Tuesday because with Gustafsson also being out for that game, Jones got a chance to move up and play in the top four. And he got paired with Adam Fox, which is by far the most prominent assignment he's had, the most responsibility that he's been given in any game. We even saw when Fox was in the penalty box during that game that Peter Laviolette gave Zach Jones a penalty kill shift, which I don't know if I ever thought I would see given his history and his skill set. But clearly Jones is playing well, earning more trust from Laviolette, and I think earning some rightful praise and recognition from the fan base. I spoke to him last week. I had that story go up. I think I mentioned it on last week's podcast, just about the headspace that he's in, the confidence that he's playing with right now, and how that's really starting to show on the ice. And I do think, to your first point, that the chances of the Rangers, for example, letting Gustafsson walk as a free agent this summer are increasing because I think that they are more and more probably open and even maybe liking the idea of Jones being a regular defenseman for them next season. But I also think that when we look ahead and we assume, and this is a big assumption because we don't know for sure if everybody will be healthy once game one of the playoffs comes around, but if everybody is available to Peter Laviolette, I have to believe that he is going to stick with the six guys that he played for the vast majority of this season. That's not to say I couldn't sit here and make an argument that Jones should play, because I do think that Jones has played well enough where you would have some confidence putting him in there in a playoff setting. But I also know that the Rangers are going to value experience. They're going to value size and physicality, especially if you're talking about a bottom pair role, which is the role that Jones would almost surely be playing in that kind of a situation. We know that Erik Gustafsson is Laviolette's preferred guy when it comes to the second power play unit, so it's not like Jones would be getting power play time either. And we also know that Laviolette just has a lot of faith in Gustafsson in general. And even though Gustafsson isn't a stay-at-home defenseman or the strongest defensive defenseman either, he does have a little more size and strength than Jones. He does obviously have a lot more experience. I think his defensive game, well, certainly not a strength of his right now, is probably a little bit ahead of Jones, and he also brings a lot of those puck-moving skills and offensive elements that we like about Jones's game. So I have to believe that if Gustafsson is healthy, that Laviolette would be inclined to stick with the guy that got him there and put Gustafsson back on that bottom pair. You could also make an argument, and I've had this conversation with a few people recently, that as well as Keandre Miller and Braden Schneider have been playing together, that maybe you want to keep that pair together. And there's an argument to be made there, but I also, again, think that Laviolette, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, is going to lean on going back to what got him here. He even made a comment after the win on Tuesday when he was asked about, well, you've got these 10 games left now. Might you experiment with some different looks? And he basically said, no, I'm inclined to stick what we're comfortable with and stick with what got us here. And so I think when you're talking about the forward lines, that means you're probably not going to see any significant changes there. And I think when it comes to the D pairs, you're probably going to see, when everybody's healthy, them go back to what they've used for multiple seasons in a lot of ways, but especially specifically this season with Peter Laviolette. And that would be Fox and Lindgren, Miller and Trouba, Schneider and Gustafsson. But I do think that in the event of an injury, whether it's a right-handed or a left-handed defenseman, no matter who it is, no matter what spot they play in, that Jones is clearly next in line. Jones would clearly be the first guy in. I think they're comfortable moving Gustafsson to the right side if needed. So that gives you a little bit of flexibility there. And I think that Laviolette has made a point of expressing his gratitude and appreciation for the way that Jones has hung in there tough this season, didn't complain when he wasn't getting much playing time, went about his business, kept working hard, was a good soldier behind the scenes. I think he's being rewarded for all that right now. And in turn, he is cementing his spot by playing well. So while you could say that Jones, maybe based on merit, maybe based on the way he's playing, deserves to see some playoff minutes, but I'm not really sure who you're taking out of the lineup. Obviously, you know they're going to play Lindgren if he's healthy. Obviously, you know they're going to play their captain, Jacob Trouba, if he's healthy. The one guy that you could look at and say, well, maybe you could argue that Jones would slot in ahead of him would be Gustafsson. But you look at Gustafsson's season, he's put together a pretty solid year for the Rangers, all things considered. Again, you know Laviolette trusts him. You look at the analytics, they paint a pretty favorable picture of the way that Gustafsson has played most of this season as well. And so I think that he would probably be the game one guy. Could there be a situation where the series isn't going your way? You want to shake things up. Maybe Gustafsson isn't playing very well and they decide at a certain point to insert Jones. That's a scenario that wouldn't completely shock me. But I do think that if everybody's healthy for game one, you're probably not going to see Jones in there. You're probably going to see the six guys that got them there, with Jones being first up in the event that anything goes wrong, whether it's performance-based, injury-based, whatever. All right, let's get to our next question, which comes from Lance Becker, who wrote, do we think Lavi will roll four lines more in the playoffs than he does in most third periods lately, or is this a preview of what's to come? I have to tell you, Lance, I do think this is a preview of what's to come, because if you are going to manage and coach regular season games this way, where when the game is tight late, that you lean heavily on your top guys because you feel like that's going to give you the best chance to win, well, then I can't see Laviolette deviating from that strategy once the playoffs start. In fact, it would almost seem more logical based on what we've seen that you could even see those guys play slightly more in the playoffs. He has not been shy, particularly with Panarin, to double shift him as often as he can when the Rangers are really hunting for offense, when the Rangers really need a goal late in games. And we've also seen him lean heavily on Vincent Trocheck. You look at a lot of these ice time sheets after these games. Trocheck, more often than not, leads all Rangers forwards in ice time. And that shows you how much Laviolette trusts him in all situations, because this is the guy that does power play, penalty kill, 5-on-5. We know that he is the number one option for the Rangers when there's a key faceoff in either end. So Trocheck is a guy that Laviolette seems to lean very heavily on in these games. Mika Zibanejad obviously falls into that category as well. I think those are the three guys he tends to like to get out there as often as he can late in these closely contested games. You could also, kind of a slight notch below them, throw Chris Kreider into that bucket and throw Alexi Lafreniere into that bucket. Those five are definitely the guys that he leans on the most. And while I agree with, to a certain extent, and hear the concerns about burning those guys out, wearing them down, and as we talked about in the first segment, I think he needs to, or should at least, back off a little bit on those guys in these last 10 regular season games, cut down on their minutes a little bit, maybe pick a spot here and there to give certain guys a night off just to make sure that their legs are as fresh as possible going into the playoffs, knowing that you're going to use them very heavily once that comes around. So for me, I think that if I'm reading the tea leaves and I'm there at every practice and watching pretty much every single game this season, it looks like Laviolette is the kind of guy who wants to sort of win or lose with his best guys on the ice, that he doesn't want to go down with his bottom six guys playing a lot of third period minutes in a tie game or a close game, especially when they're chasing it, when they're down by a goal late. I think you're going to see Panarin out there pretty much every other shift in a lot of games like that. And in a playoff setting, I get it. I do really get it in that kind of setting. I just think in the regular season, especially at this point, now that you're clinched and you've got some time here, that maybe making it so those guys are playing more like 15, 16, 17 minutes a night as opposed to 19, 20, 21, saving some of those bullets for the playoffs is probably a good idea. But to your question, Lance, is he going to roll all four lines? To an extent, yeah. Obviously, you're going to see all four lines play some kind of a role in the playoffs. But I think based on what we've seen, those top forwards, those top six guys, really those top five guys, those are going to be the guys that he wants to depend on when it gets down to the nitty gritty. And I don't see that strategy changing. I don't think all of a sudden you're going to go from, hey, I'm playing Artemi Panarin double shifts and 20 plus minutes a night to get a regular season win, but I'm not going to do that in the playoffs. I think we're getting a taste right now of what we're going to see in the postseason. All right. Let's get to our final question, which comes from Lino, who wrote, of the two, these two trade deadline additions, who is more likely to be back next year? Wennberg, Roslovic, or both? My gut here, Lino, is to tell you that I think it's likely neither of them. You look at Chris Drury's previous two trade deadlines, he did not re-sign any of those guys. I think they flirted with the possibility of a low-cost guy like Tyler Mott coming back. Obviously, we saw them reacquire him at back-to-back deadlines, so clearly that's a guy that they would have liked to keep around. But I also think that what we've seen from the Rangers is they seem to prefer going after rentals, and they seem absolutely fine saying, thanks for your service, see you later, once the offseason comes around. So I think if I were basing a bet on it right now, that I would say neither of those guys are going to be back next season. And especially when you look at their contracts, Wennberg is making $4.5 million right now. Roslovic is making $4 million. If they were going to come in significantly cheaper than that, that would increase the chances. But you'd have to think that both guys are probably going to be aiming to make around the same, if not more, on the open market, and that in all likelihood I think would price the Rangers out. I do think, I will say, that of all of the positions that they might be hunting for this offseason, whether it's via trade or via free agency, center to me is going to be the top priority, because you have to have some kind of an insurance policy in case Filip Hedl is not able to give you a full season next year. Obviously, they're hopeful that Hedl will be back, and everything that I've heard so far indicates that the plan is for him to show up for training camp and intend to be a regular in the lineup right off the bat. And fingers crossed, I think everybody is hoping that that can happen. But I think what we learned this year is that you can't necessarily bank on that, and you have to have a backup plan. So I think they're going to want some insurance there. And then I also think beyond that, the center depth in this organization is very thin. There are no prospects, as far as centers are concerned, coming up the pipeline right now who project as top nine kind of guys at the NHL level, at least not anytime soon. Maybe Bryce McConnell Barker eventually, but even that, I think in the eyes of some, might be a stretch. So for the Rangers, I think they're going to want to solidify themselves down the middle a little bit more. And we've talked about the possibility of a Gaudreau buyout, which I think will be a point of discussion this offseason, which again would weaken your depth at center. So I think one way or another, I anticipate the Rangers trying to bring in another center this offseason. And if they can find some middle ground with Wennberg, then maybe it is a possibility. But again, this is a guy making $4.5 million right now. So my question would be, is he willing to take a pay cut from that to remain in New York? Because I don't know if the Rangers are going to be willing to pay him $4.5 million, especially when their hope is that Filip Hedl will be their third line center next year. Obviously, Zibanejad and Trocheck are pretty entrenched at this point as the top two. They'd love to have Hedl being the third guy. And then if you re-sign Wennberg, I mean, I guess you could either shift him or Hedl to a wing. That's a possibility, but I just don't know if they're going to be willing to go for $5 million for a guy who's likely to play on their third line. I think they're probably going to be looking for a cheaper price point than that. So I would say Wennberg may be slightly more of a chance than Rossovic just because of the position that he plays. But again, I don't know if I see a way for the money to work out there. I don't really think that wing is going to be a huge priority for the Rangers this offseason. Now, they might go out there and they might try to finally solidify that top line right wing spot with a more permanent solution. But in a lot of ways, I might think that that is more likely via trade. And that will depend on what they decide to do with Kaapo Kakko as well, who's entering an RFA summer this year. So that's going to be an interesting situation to monitor for sure. But we also know they have some wingers coming in the pipeline. Brennan Othman, Gabe Perreault, Brett Berard. There's quite a few guys, Adam Sikora. So wing is a spot where I think they don't necessarily need to pay big money, and I don't think they'd be willing to necessarily do that for Rossovic to retain him, especially given what the price point is for him as well. Center is, I think, where they're going to probably have to invest a little bit more of their cap space to make sure that they're protected. But my hunch at this point would be it's probably going to be somebody who comes a little bit cheaper than Wennberg. They will have a little more cap flexibility than usual this summer, at least than what we're used to the previous few summers. So it's feasible that they could add a guy who makes more than basically the league minimum, which is all we saw them do last season. I think that is very much in play. But again, I don't know if they're going to go to that $4 or $5 million range, which is the range that Wennberg and Roslovic are both in. The last point I would make on Roslovic, just in case you guys haven't seen it yet, I did some digging on him once the Rangers acquired him. Actually talked to some people around the league, for one, and got some opinions on him, but also reached out to the U.S. National Team Development Program, where Roslovic played for a few years, played on a very high-profile line with Austin Matthews and Matthew Tkachuk. Not sure if you guys have ever heard of them, but I found it really interesting to go through the history of this guy and the sort of knack that he's had for playing with these high-end players, and why it is that the Rangers saw him as a really good fallback option once the likes of Jake Guentzel and Frank Vetrano didn't work out for them. And even the fact that the Rangers, I think, had their eyes on this guy for a while, I found out through this process that he was one of the names that they inquired about when they made that trade in 2019 to send Kevin Hayes to the Winnipeg Jets. So some interesting stuff for sure with Roslovic, and that story went up on all of our websites on Wednesday morning. So if you haven't had a chance to read that one yet, if you want to learn a little bit more about Roslovic and why the Rangers felt like he was a good fit for this situation, I would encourage you to go check that one out. But do I see him being here for more than a few months? Do I see him being here next season? I think the odds are probably pretty low. And I would say the same thing, maybe to a little bit of a lesser degree, with Wennberg. All right. With that, we are going to conclude this week's episode. Thank you to everybody who submitted questions. Thank you to everybody who listened. Thank you to Dan Rosen for taking some time to chat with us. Always have a great time chatting with him, and certainly have a great time with him in the press box. One of the guys I've gotten to know pretty well over the years and really enjoy spending time with, and I'm sure we'll be spending a lot more time together looking ahead to the playoffs. And we've got a few more weeks to look ahead to the playoffs. So I'm going to line up some stuff in the next few weeks. I know I had a conversation recently with Steve Valiquette, who we love having on the show, and he expressed some interest in coming back on at some point before the playoffs start as well. So I'm sure we'll dive into some interesting stuff with him in one of these next few episodes. We've got a few weeks here to digest all of this and look ahead and figure out exactly where the Rangers are in this quest to end the 30-year drought and chase that elusive Stanley Cup. So, and it's an exciting time. The weather, hopefully, we can only keep praying, will turn for us at some point soon. Baseball season is starting for people like me who enjoy that. I'm excited about that. But most importantly, our focus is going to be on the NHL playoffs, which are coming up very quickly. So it's an exciting time of year. You also got March Madness basketball going on for those that are into that. But the focus on this pod will continue to be hockey and will continue to be the New York Rangers. So we'll look ahead to all that stuff in the coming weeks. But for now, I hope you guys are all well. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, and I will talk to you all next time.